Blog Talk Radio.
Dear friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie ahead, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster. And with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great.
Seems like we were just talking, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, we normally do this show Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And, last night we had our show on Tuesday. The first show of the week was Tuesday this week, but...
We could have copped out and done just a Tuesday, Thursday week, but no. We're giving three shows this
hey,
week.
We want to be here for you.
That's right. we're here for you, the home listener, and are in your car. I often listen to the show in my car, I must say. I like to drive around, especially when I got the kids with me. They're like, Dad, what are you? Is that you? Well, we wanted to get the three shows in because we've been pretty good about three shows since we've gone to this format, haven't we?
That's right. And it's our thought that, we could do it in one long, hour and a half long show. And if you want to listen to it that way, you're certainly welcome to. I mean, it's, you fix your podcatcher software to and where you can get it all, listen to it all at once. But we're thinking this is, commuter-sized bites, the 30-minute show. So that's kind of our thinking on that. So
I will say, though, I was doing some yard work on Saturday, and I did listen to our unanswerable question shows, 1, 2, and 3 in a row.
Okay.
Some solid stuff right there. I'm telling you, when we do these series, folks, yeah, it's worth take 90 minutes out of your life and give us a listen, You get to hear my spiel three times, which that's always nice, but and also there's some other geek in there. So, man, this show has a lot to offer, the more I think about it. But tonight, we're doing something really incredible. Accelerating medical technologies, which are amazingly good for what ails you, of course, amazing. This is Amazing Wednesday, and we're going to talk about stuff that's amazing. And let me tell you, Stephen, we've got three stories that we're going to talk about representing three major areas of medical technological acceleration. And every one of these is amazing in its own right. Every one of these is the plot of a science fiction story from when we were kids, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And not even kids. There's a couple. The second one that we get into was the plot of a science fiction movie about 10 years ago, So
there you go.
Very good one. Very good one. Gattaca.
An excellent movie. Yes. So there it is. So we're gonna talk about these three major developments. Well, and let's go through the stories first, and then maybe we'll talk about what it all means and how what the impact will be of living in a world where all these things are happening at the same time. But the first one is actually one we did touch upon on Tuesday's show. The headline is, in a medical first, brain implant allows paralyzed man to feel again. And this is just the next step, as we said yesterday, in this kind of ongoing merger, really, of the human nervous system and computer technology. There have been amazing steps taken along these lines already. But this is a big one, because here we're talking about a paralyzed man experiencing the sense of touch in his mind-controlled robotic arm. Okay, so
right.
He's got a robotic arm, which he can control with his thoughts. That's the kind of thing a year or two or three or four ago we were talking about what a big step that was, and it was. That's a huge step.
that a human brain can send signals to basically a computer interface and make a limb attached to a body work. But now we're getting the feedback, right? It's not just the instructions coming from the brain, but it's the sensory input coming back to the brain, what we call the sense of touch. And that really does complete the loop. It's not perfect. It's not the exact loop that we have with a biological hand, obviously, and an uninjured, undamaged nervous system. But this is huge. I mean, we were talking about all the different ways this is big the other night, and you don't want to lose sight of just how big a thing it is medically, right? This is the process of, the whole function of the nervous system becoming this solved problem for computers, isn't it?
Well, and I guess we first saw things like this with the cochlear implant, the implant that allows mm-hmm. people to hear again. And that's been around a remarkable long period of time. Now, it gets better and better all the time. There was a time when a cochlear implant in the late 70s would just allow you to hear sound, but not be able
right.
to distinguish what, if you could know that somebody was yelling at you, which is an important
right.
thing sometimes to know, right? So
right.
the first people to get it would, that was the whole purpose of it. It wasn't to be able to understand what anyone was saying, but you could at least know if somebody was yelling at you. You can turn around and look at them and maybe read their lips, right?
Right.
That was the first generation of those, but it got better and better. When Rush Limbaugh received his cochlear implant, it was about, I guess that was 6 or 7 years ago at least,
mm-hmm.
and he described what it was like. He described it as being like listening to the entire world through a microcassette recorder.
Mm-hmm.
That quality of being able to hear, and
right.
I thought that was pretty interesting. He says now. I can hear music, but I don't enjoy it anymore. And a couple of years ago, he mentioned again, well, you know what? I've had some improvements, and I can enjoy music again, but not new music. New music is like noise to me. But if I hear music that I knew before when I had my ears, my normal ears,
right?
It's good enough now that I can enjoy old music.
Wow,
and I'm not sure why that would be, but I thought I found that fascinating.
That has got something to do with neural pathways that have been laid down, right?
That's right.
And
apparently, you can't lay down new pathways yet, or with what you had a couple of years ago.
Right.
That keeps getting better and better. And you think, well, now they're getting to where you can feel with a prosthetic limb. And the hope is obviously, at some point where, blind people are, putting on frames that can deliver the world visually to their brains, right?
Exactly, yeah.
That's the next step. The cochlear implant for the eyes.
And the point is that the progress that has occurred up to this point implies, there is really no reason to believe we won't be seeing that pretty soon, really. It's not something where we have to ask, well, gee, I wonder if they'll have that someday. It's just a question of when will we have that? Because we will. If you
right.
can make a computer talk to a brain and vice versa, where one set of sensory input is concerned, you can do it with any. And you can get better and better, as the story about Rush Limbaugh indicates, in terms of refining that sensory input. It's really astounding. To look at how much of this progress has occurred and really not gotten the kind of media attention you would think it would,
Right.
This should be the biggest news. In fact, every story we're going to talk about tonight should be like the biggest news. And really, we just kind of accept it, don't we?
Yeah, where it's like we're conditioned just to accept negative news about the state of the affairs of the world, and how the world's always going to hell in the handbasket. But and meanwhile, all these incredible things are happening around us, and we just fail to notice it. And that's part
yeah.
of the function of this show is to kind of counteract that.
Yeah, wake up, sheeple! Come on, the world's getting better all the time, man.
That's
anybody
right.
else going to know it? It must be aliens doing it.
Because that's a wake-up show. keep it real here. But let's talk about these other two. So we've got our hat trick of awesomeness here. Okay, so our next story is the CRISPR gene editing is making huge strides in curing sickle cell disease. Sickle cell disease used to be called sickle cell anemia. This is a major health problem for African Americans, basically for Africans, right? People of
African descent. And there's a reason for that, Phil. It turns out there's an evolutionary advantage to having one half of the set of genes that would give you sickle cell disease.
Mm-hmm.
If you just got one half of the genes, it gives you resistance to malaria. And there's an evolutionary reason that that's in the African population, and that's to
So
combat
sickle cells
malaria.
Make you malaria resistant. Is that
resistant?
Right?
That's
wow.
right. And so if you just have half the genes, maybe from one parent, then you only have slightly sickle cells. It doesn't affect you very much at all, and you don't have the disease. You're not considered having the disease, but you have a strong resistance to malaria. And so it's only when two people that have half of the genes meet up and have children, there's like one chance in four. So maybe out of their four kids, maybe one of them has sickle cell disease. And quite frankly, it's sort of a Faustian bargain if you think about it.
Wow. Yeah.
Evolution finds
a way to solve the problem.
Yeah, it's not a happy solution for those who have the disease, but that's what was happening there.
Yeah, well, it's also not the finished solution. I mean, this is like
no, it's not
in action.
That's not.
Yeah, this is as far as we've gotten with this one so far. You know what's interesting about that is there is a very similar condition in Southeast Asian populations called thalassemia, very similar to sickle cell disease in terms of how it's transmitted, very similar in terms of a lot of the symptoms, it appears to be kind of a branch of the same illness. And I wonder, isn't also associated with
something like
being,
malaria.
Yeah, yeah, being perhaps. Resistant to malaria, because that's a big problem in Southeast Asia. And it just kind of makes sense now. It's like, where do these things come from? Well, that's where they come from. You don't get malaria.
There is an evolutionary advantage to having that in your population. If you're saving three out of four of your kids, if all of them would have died of malaria, but one of your kids instead has to die of sickle cell, then as far as evolution is concerned, that's a win, So,
right.
As grieving parents, that's cold comfort, but that's what's going on there. So what do we do? Well, it is a mutation of a single gene, and CRISPR is basically our word processor for genes, right? And so,
right.
If we can get in there
because
and
fast
change,
forward, we've got other ways of dealing with malaria in the 21st century, right? You can't make a person malaria resistant. Maybe, but you can make a community pretty much malaria resistant, right? You can make a place resistant to malaria, and you can treat malaria in the rare instances when it does come up. So now what do? We got people carrying this. I mean, let's not get lost around the fact that this is a bad thing to have, right?
Oh, yeah. It's awful.
Yeah. In terms of what it does to you.
Yeah. I knew a very nice lady that just passed away from the disease, and she just suffered terribly.
Yeah.
Phil, and it's awful. So what can be done? This could be something that would cure not just not just children or maybe babies in utero. This is something that that perhaps could even treat adults. And the way they would do it is introduce the edited genes into the bone marrow, and it said just a small percentage of change. Introduce it into the bone marrow throughout the body, and like a change of 1% of the DNA in your body would be sufficient to alleviate huge parts of the disease.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's they think they really are onto something here.
And I wonder, can they introduce enough of it into the bone marrow to just eliminate the disease completely or no?
Well, you know, baby steps, I guess, Phil. Is,
yeah.
And, you know, and so they're going to try it this way and just see, you know, hey, you know, if we can, you know, change the DNA in a 1% of somebody's body, and basically, you know, take away 50% of their suffering with the disease, then hey, that's great. So maybe that'll be the first step, and then ultimately that cure it completely in somebody. You know, baby steps. I'm thinking also, you know, any disease that has a genetic component could ultimately be helped by this, but the first diseases that'll be conquered by this sort of technology will be the single gene mutations. And another one that I'm thinking of is Huntington's disease.
Okay.
And that's a disease that it's caused by a repeat of you know, like it's like a you know your genetic code got skipped a groove, and it's, you know, on the record or something. It's a repeat of the code, and the more repeats you have, the younger you are when the disease strikes, and you know, you are rendered incapacitated mentally. And it's a terribly sad disease, and unfortunately, you live just long enough to have children that potentially could have the disease too. So it's just an awful, awful thing. But what if CRISPR could edit that one gene? And yeah. This is very, very exciting, particularly for these diseases like sickle cell and Huntington's that are the result of a single gene problem.
Well, this is the thing. We've been hearing about CRISPR, you know, this amazing, the word processor of genes, as you said. I mean, that's you know, if you're pitching it as a movie, right, or as a,
yeah,
you know, as a product to invest in, that's what you say. But, you know, where does the rubber hit the road? What are we really getting for this? And then you've got this amazing proof of concept in treatment that they're talking about here for sickle cell disease. And
right.
Then you just start thinking, yeah, what about Huntington's? What about a lot of diseases that that follow pretty much that same profile, right? There's a gene that is causing it. You know, there's an awful lot of human suffering that can be attributed to exactly those kinds of diseases. And you can also go the other way on this, since you brought it up. What if we could find a way to make people malaria resistant, right, genetically,
right,
without giving them sickle cell disease? It seems like that would be pretty beneficial too. So, just in this one story, you see the potential to do tremendous things. Really, as we talked, was it 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, this big push project to end all diseases.
Right.
CRISPR has got to be one of the, you know, one of the main arrows.
It's an enabling technology to make something like that possible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, if we're going to get rid of all diseases, CRISPR is going to play a big role, or technology.
Well, you know, we figure out how to make, you know, immune system 2.0. And you would, you know, create in a willing test subject, a immune system that could do, you know, do things that a normal human immune system couldn't.
Right.
You know, for example, I mean, we humans tend to be able to battle off one or two or three diseases at once, and that's about the best that our immune system can do. Have you ever noticed, Phil, that if you're fighting off a cold or something, well, that's the time that that cold sore pops up on your lip or something. You know, or you all of a sudden you end up with, you know, oh my gosh, you look in the mirror and go, I'm like a teenager with pimples all over my face again. What's going on?
Right.
But your immune system laying down arms in that one battle, you know, to fight something it feels is more serious. I mean, that's kind of the deal. What if you had an immune system that just, you know, could fight a multi-front war, right? And, That's what you want, and in a version 2.0, and one that perhaps, you know, you could easily modify when new diseases are, you know, pop up or something. You could quickly let your body know how to fight it, you know. And
well, potentially with immune system 2.0, what you would get
is the cancer-proof human, right? People who are as resistant to cancer as sickle cell disease makes you resistant to malaria. That would be the end game. And we know that there's a big link between immune response and cancer, that some of the most promising treatments for cancer are coming along, immunotherapy.
One of the reasons that young people rarely get cancer is because they have young and vital immune systems.
Exactly.
And as we get older and our immune systems begin to be less efficient, that's when we become more susceptible to cancer. And that's right.
All right. Now, let's move on to our third one, because we're going to talk about all three of them together at some point.
Yeah.
Scientists grow full-size human beating hearts from stem cells. And this just goes to show you how we do get used to these things, right? Because you know what? When I read this headline, I was like, well, they've already done that, right? Haven't they? But they hadn't. This is new. We've talked about growing organs. We've talked about growing kidneys and lungs. And this is a huge step to be able to actually build a heart. Actually, to be able to build any adult organ that functions is a huge step, because of the problem of transplantation, the problem of rejection of transplanted organs, and also shortages of transplanted organs. When people need a part replaced, right now they have to wait and hopefully get something, and then the thing they get doesn't really fit in their body very well, and there's this big battle of trying to make that thing work. Well, what if you could grow...
And you have to take immune suppressant drugs the rest of your life. And
make yourself more susceptible to cancer and lots of other stuff. Yeah. What if, though, you could just grow a new heart, right?
With your own stem cells, it is your heart.
Yeah, grow your heart.
Quite at home in your own body. Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about you take pluripotent stem cells, and essentially you grow new heart tissue. Now, they're still using scaffolding from existing organs. So they take the cartilage, the part of the heart that kind of holds everything together, from a cadaver, and they clean that off. They bleach off all the the cells with different DNA, and then they just use that as a scaffold, and they grow a heart. And they're not transplanting them into patients yet, but what we're talking about here is basically a working adult organ. We're just a few steps away from people actually growing their own organs and being able to get transplants with their own organs. Now, I ask you, Stephen, of the three technologies we've listed here, which of these is biggest? And which of these do you think is going to have the biggest, like, say, short-term and long-term impact, do you think?
That's a hard one, Phil. I'm going to go with the middle story, though. I would say CRISPR gene editing is the biggest of the three. But, the ability to be able to feel with something that's not part of my body, in effect, would allow – I mean, there's technology, technologies all over the place. I mean, and not just for people that are disabled. What if we had probes on Mars – that I could reach out with the probe arm and feel and grasp, the rock there on the surface of Mars and be able to examine it, as if I were there.
Yeah, that's actually touch it. Yeah.
There's something to be said for allowing a person, to giving the person the ability to feel, with a machine arm, and that. We haven't touched all the things. We haven't even imagined all the things that could bring. But that's huge. And then of course, being able to transplant organs, that are essentially your organs, and when on demand, whenever you need it, that's huge. That's huge. And but I'm going to tell you, CRISPR is bigger than all that, because it could essentially give us disease-free humans. And ultimately, I think that's the end game of what CRISPR and like technologies could bring. So
I think
one, that's the one.
There is no question long term CRISPR is the answer. The
The only, to me, the only question is short term. Is it the big one? And it probably is, even in the fairly short term. But if they really get this going with growing organs, that's going to be huge too.
Right.
That's the one thing you can't do with genes. I mean, you can make your, I don't think you can make your body last a lot longer, and you can make it less likely to wear out. But when parts wear out, you need to replace them ultimately. What we're talking about doing therapeutically, eventually, you know, in a remedial way, eventually people might do in a more preventive way, right? It's like, well, oh, it's been 50 years, time for a new heart, right? And you just get a new one.
Ultimately,
the air filter on your car or something like that, right?
Well, ultimately, what you want, Phil, is not to have to cut into somebody and put a new heart, even if it's grown from their own body parts, right, or from their own stem cells. What you would ultimately want to do is have little CRISPR gene editors fixing the heart that's in their chest, so that you never have to have an operation. You got a damaged heart because you had a heart attack. Well, you know what? These little machines are in there fixing it right now, and that's how to handle a damaged organ. Perhaps you got kidney disease.
If you can avoid that trauma of actually having a heart transplant, that's probably
that's right. Fix it, in vitro, right inside your body. That's the way to, so ultimately, I say CRISPR even trumps being able to grow outside the body human organs. Never have to even put them into the body, just to, let it happen inside your body, whatever needs to happen.
Absolutely. Of course, what you're describing will require some significant advances for CRISPR and for nanotech and a lot of things coming together.
Oh, yeah, and this is way on down the road. But I think it's a long-term, that sort of technology is a long-term gain. And, but in the meantime, we'll see the hearts that grown from patients on stem cells used for many years, I would imagine, before we see what I was talking about.
Well, I certainly want to live long enough to see all of these become hugely impactful, especially the last two. And it's like
perhaps these things will allow us to live long enough to see these things become.
That's right. It's like the longer you live, the more likely you are to benefit from these, and therefore the longer you will live. So
that's right.
Let's hang in there, folks. These things, we always say faster, please. The faster, the better. I'm glad to see incredible progress being made in all of these areas. It really is amazing progress being made in all of these areas, but we can only hope that the acceleration continues and even speeds up. These will all be tremendously beneficial to us in our old age. They're also going to be really beneficial to young people, very, very beneficial to everybody on the planet. Eventually, and I hope that eventuality gets here sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
And with that, Stephen, we are just about out of time. Can you believe it? We're more than halfway through the week. We're gonna pick this whole thing back up on Friday. We got a brand new show. We're gonna be talking about. Are you ready for this? Secrets Revealed. And I wish we had some good dramatic music to go with that, because that I think that could be right up there with Tales of the Paranormal. We need that. Secrets Revealed.
Secrets Revealed.
Exactly. You folks are not going to want to miss that. Stephen, it's been great talking with you about accelerating medical technologies. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see you.